Okay, women, who among us has not had hormonal issues? We're not only dealing with changes our bodies go through, but also hormonal disruptors in our environment. The good news is there's help. It's by Happy Mammoth, and it's called Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. And maybe the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews of Hormone Harmony. And there are more than 30,000 reviews to date. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DATINGWHILEGRAY at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DATINGWHILEGRAY for 15% off today. Finding love takes time. So when we finally connect with someone, we may have the tendency to hold on tight. The longer we hang on, the more entrenched we become, and the harder it gets to change course, even though numerous signs may be telling us we're going the wrong way. The stay or go dilemma, that's coming up on Dating While Gray, the grown-up's guide to love, sex, and relationships. I'm Laura Stassi. I recently received a voicemail reminding me that when it comes to love, it's not necessarily find one and then done.
Hi, Laura. I became a widow at 61 in June of 2020 when my husband of 39 years passed away from COVID-19. I moved to a different city to be closer to my daughter and start a new life. I made new friends in the 55-plus community that I live in, but something was missing from my life, so I started online dating. I had a few dates and even one short-term relationship. It ended abruptly, no reason other than not compatible. Finally, I met someone special. Of course, there is a catch. He lives almost 300 miles away, plus he is 10 years older. Things didn't work out. We ended our 10-month relationship 2 months ago. I have since moved on and found a new love interest, closer to home, and we are the same age. Thank you for all your research, interviews, and enthusiasm for us gray daters. It is so nice to know I am not alone when it comes to believing passion is still there for those of us who are searching for it.
Passion is still there for those searching for it. I love that line, though I confess, sometimes my faith has wavered. I also understand how difficult it can be to gain the confidence to go searching for it, especially when you're in an unfulfilling long-term relationship. Like Mary, that's not her real name. We chatted for an episode in early 2021 during the coronavirus lockdown. Mary was so concerned about anonymity that she spoke via Zoom from her car in a parking garage. At the time, Mary and her husband had been together about 25 years, had two kids. The romance had died. She couldn't remember the last time they had any type of physical intimacy. She was unhappy in many other ways, too, and she was struggling about whether to leave. Here's a clip from that episode.
I go back and forth in my mind about what to do because there's so many different thoughts in my mind, you know. Am I expecting too much? And just the fear of what all this could do, you know, the upheaval. Is it worth all that if I make a change?
So that's the million-dollar question. I mean,
you just don't know, right? As I get older, I start to think, you know, is this really how? And especially now that it will be more and more just me and him at home,
yeah.
I start to think, is this really how I want to spend however many years I have left if it's, you know, if I'm fortunate to live another 20, 30, 40 years?
3 years later, Mary is still in limbo. She tells me in an email that the biggest thing holding her back from ending her marriage is their two grown kids. Mary says they still enjoy taking family vacations, and she doesn't want to lose that. She's also worried they'll blame her for the marriage ending. I think what Mary is describing is a fear of being selfish.
It's interesting you bring up that word selfish, because I look at that as two words. You've got selfish in the narcissistic, all about me sense. And I distinguish that from self-ish, which I see as the willingness and ability to take care of oneself.
That's Linda Hirschman. She's a marriage and family therapist, and she wrote a book called Gray Divorce, Everything You Need to Know About Later Life Breakups. We're going to hear a lot more from Linda later in this episode. But first, meet Chris. He's in his early 60s and lives in California. Like Mary, Chris has long struggled with a relationship decision.
So I was married for 25 years. We had some good times. I think it was a mismatch from the beginning, and there was tensions from the beginning that we tried to iron out over the years with some success.
Let's go back to the beginning. How did you two meet?
We met when a friend of mine who was a coworker of hers thought we might get along and introduced us. The three of us went out for lunch and we hit it off right away.
How old were you?
I was 43 years old.
So you were older.
Excuse me. 33 years old.
33.
She was 5 years younger.
Okay. So you were still a little bit on the older side for getting married. Yeah. And
yes.
As we've talked about on the podcast, that's supposed to be a protective factor against divorce. The older you are. Was this a first marriage for both of you?
It was.
Yeah. Okay. And so you also described, I think you used not very happily married for 25 years. I don't mean to giggle. I just like the way you describe things. It seemed like a mismatch, but yet you got married and had kids.
Well, I think we might have seen problems from the beginning. We dated for 3 years before we got married, and she was kind of repeatedly uncomfortable with the relationship. I think some of it had to do with my being kind of ambivalent about making a commitment, which is a pattern of mine. She was interested in getting married. So she would withdraw, and then we'd get back together again, withdraw and get back together again. I think sexual differences made themselves apparent during the first 3 years, where we weren't really quite wanting the same kind of sexual relationship, and that caused tensions. I think all of this should have been big warning signs before we got married. But at some point, I mean, she felt like the biggest problem for her was my lack of commitment. And so she thought, well, if we're married, that problem's going to be gone and everything will be fine, which, of course, is a classic stupid mistake. But that's what we did.
Well, and I think sometimes we feel like, okay, we've been dating for a certain amount of time. Why not get married? That's what everybody else does. You know, we kind of fall into these traditional thoughts. And you had kids, yes?
Yeah, it was a while. I think it was like 7 years of marriage before we had kids.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them.
Tell me some good things. What drew you to her in the first place? Where did you really click?
It's a good question. There was just some vibe between us that felt comfortable. I remember the meal, the first meal that we had together with our friend, and I think we just liked looking at each other, and we felt good talking to each other. It was a couple of weeks before we had our first date, but we were going to go out to a park and listen to some music. We ended up having a 16-hour first date.
Oh, my.
Sat out on her porch until the wee hours of the morning, talking and talking and talking about our lives. So there was definitely a connection there.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds lovely. It sounds like what we want, because, you know, you said about sexual differences or sexual interest differences, but it feels like that kind of connection where you're able to talk to someone for 16 hours, that sounds like it would then naturally lead to, you know, more of a physical connection. No?
We felt the physical connection that night. And the second time we saw each other, we consummated the physical connection. So the feeling was definitely there.
Oh.
But I think there were, I don't know, temperament differences that made themselves known. I think both of us had our own difficulties with emotional intimacy and our own kind of walls that we had around ourselves. And I think it prevented us from getting beyond a certain point in intimacy. I think neither of us could easily feel safe with the other. We almost got divorced in 2015, and we had a pattern that happens a lot. My wife was the one that would withdraw from the relationship. I would be the pursuer to try to say, let's work this out. Let's talk to a therapist, etc. In 2015, she said she felt like she wanted to separate and end it, which was very traumatic for me. We came this close to doing it. We decided to talk to a therapist and work through some of the feelings around it. And in the course of the therapy, we worked out some issues and we sort of accidentally reconciled.
Up until that point, had you seen counseling, or were you just thinking, okay, we're married, we're just going to soldier on?
We saw counselors, I forget, maybe 3 times. I think sometimes was more helpful, sometimes was less. We went to one, a marriage therapist couple in Santa Fe near where we lived. And I believe they were into Imago methods. And that particular workshop was fantastic. And we were sort of believers afterward and felt fantastic afterward. But it was very hard to maintain the practices that we had learned in the workshop. Mm. And I think we had a good moment there, but we sort of slid back into our patterns where it was just difficult to make a real open emotional connection with each other.
So were you surprised when she said she wanted to split?
Well, the tensions had been obvious, and we'd felt the tensions on and off for years, and we'd had conflicts on and off over the years. So I was not completely surprised, but it was still traumatic to have it happen at the time.
Yeah.
I was terrified. We had 2 kids that were fairly young, I don't know, like 10-ish, something like that. I was very afraid of being an old person alone in the world where I'd never find anyone again. We had some financial challenges, and I was very afraid of what would happen to us if we split.
Yeah.
I was very afraid of disrupting the family. I didn't want the family broken apart. Even though it was not a very well-functioning family, I wanted to try to keep it together. So it was very hard that time.
I appreciate that I'm hearing this and that our listeners will be hearing this from a man, because typically the things you've expressed, other than the finances, have been what women feel. They want to keep their families together. They're terrified of being on their own. So I appreciate that those are universal feelings and not necessarily, you know, male feelings or female feelings. And of course, the financial aspects are always kind of scary for everybody.
Yes.
Sorry, that was my long little rant. So, okay, so she said this, you have all these emotions running around, and then you saw a counselor, and did you feel like then she was just kind of placating you by going to this counselor again?
No, I think we were both in favor of it at the time. In fact, historically, I had been the one that was more likely to suggest counseling, to say, we could do something to fix this. Let's work on this together. And I think I was the one that usually advocated that. And I think I was the one that brought the idea up this time, and she agreed that it would be good to talk to someone to work through clearly the difficult emotions we were going to have. Mm-hmm. So we went into it, I think, both of us pretty willingly.
And thinking that you were going to be able to do a final fix on the marriage or figuring out how
No. At that time, we were planning to get divorced.
Okay.
And the idea of talking to this therapist was just to help us, I think, deal with the emotions that we were having around the divorce and breaking up the family and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up talking about a lot of the conflicts that we'd been through. And during the process of that, some things got better. And we decided then to stay together.
Oh, so you decided to stay. Okay. Yeah, I know it's hard. And, you know, when I laugh, I'm laughing kind of out of nervousness and also out of recognition because, you know, there's a lot to be said about having a history with a person and having human beings with a person. And so, sure.
Both of us had some behaviors that contributed to our problems. After that period of working with this counselor, she commented more than once how much I had worked to change some of the things that were problematic about me, which was a very sharp tongue, being very impatient, very critical, sometimes angry. She said over and over again that she was amazed at how much I had worked and how much I had changed.
Hmm.
The thing is that I got the impression at the time that she viewed the situation as one where I was causing all the problems, and now I had fixed my problems and we wouldn't have any more problems. And I didn't feel that she had taken responsibility for end of things. And I was actually kind of apprehensive as to how long the peace would last. I thought at the time that, well, maybe we'll have 4 or 5 years till the kids are bigger before things unravel again. And in fact, that is exactly what happened.
Kicking the can down the road, so to speak.
Yes. The final separation came about. The background was some really serious mental health issues that she was suffering from. She'd had depression for many years that had been pretty well managed. She'd had some PTSD from childhood experiences that had been dealt with. But for some reason, in the summer of 2020, during the pandemic, something started to unravel with her, and it manifested itself in some rages, you know, bringing up things that from the past 25 years, things we've long ago talked about and I thought laid to rest. She got very severe anxiety and depression issues, so she had to go on disability for a little while. Clearly, those issues caused her to withdraw a lot from the relationship. And I wanted to be supportive, but she really didn't want me involved in any of it. So she didn't want to discuss the problems, didn't want to discuss the treatment, didn't want to discuss whether we would remain as a couple or not, or whether she was interested in that. And I kind of finally started to press on her, do we want to preserve this marriage or not? And at some point she finally said, no, let's not. And at that point, I was completely ready. I said, okay, let's just do this, because I knew that we'd had enough. I knew it was not going to get better.
Yeah. You'd been through counseling more than once.
Yes.
Yeah. But did you feel like there were some now health issues for her, some mental health issues? Did that make splitting up harder for you?
She was clearly suffering from some serious problems. I think at the point that we finally separated, I was feeling a desire for self-preservation. I just felt like I had been through so much. And in hindsight, I think that I should have taken the responsibility maybe for stepping out of the marriage earlier than I had, because I was not happy. And I think I was very passive in saying, well, maybe things will get better. Eventually things will get better. Maybe I'm being too negative. I think the right thing to have done would have been for us to separate earlier than we did. And so I think our marriage was not strong enough to survive this kind of crisis. And once this crisis hit, I didn't have any qualms about just each of us doing what we needed to do for ourselves.
Yeah.
My wife and I agreed to stay in our house. We have a rented house, and we agreed to stay in it for 5 months until the end of the school year, both for financial and for the kids to not have such a disruption. We almost made it. She ended up moving out a little early because she just felt like the tension was too much between us.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say that the first night that we were not sleeping under the same roof, I felt such a relief that I cannot describe to you. I just felt this feels so much better. And I've never stopped feeling relief that we're not doing that anymore.
Oh, that makes me sad. I mean, I totally understand. And at the same time, it's so sad. You know, I've heard of many couples, I've done it, where you're trying to maintain some sort of harmony in the house while it's all falling apart. And that's really hard. It's really hard to live with. I think that's harder than splitting up, actually. So you stayed in the house with the kids, and then she moved to a different place.
Right. She got an apartment. My daughter left for college soon after, and then my son did a half a week with each of us between our two homes.
You said you felt relief at that point. Did you think about dating, or did you decide to go ahead and get all the, you know, paperwork and the technicalities of the divorce final before you wanted to date again?
I waited a while. I started dating, I think, about 9 months after we separated. Because I felt, rightly or wrongly, I felt like, well, I think I'm ready to be talking to some other people in my life and have something else going on. And I also thought that our divorce was almost over. I thought, well, there's really nothing to argue about. We'll be done in 2 or 3 months. As it turned out, it became much more adversarial than I expected and dragged on for 2 years beyond that. So it wasn't what I expected. I met someone at 3 months of dating who I... Actually, on my 60th birthday, it was our first date.
Aww.
And we immediately clicked and formed a relationship that went almost for a year. But unfortunately, that ended up being to the backdrop of this contentious divorce going on, which was unfortunate. It was not what she signed on for. She was not expecting that, and I was not expecting that. So it was a difficult time, but it was a wonderful time too. I mean, to form a new relationship with somebody and find out, oh, yes, I can be happy with another person can be happy with me. It was a really big deal.
Yeah. You probably know your wife better than anybody else. Do you think that this contentiousness, do you think she really didn't want the split? Or do you think, you know, it was starting to scare her about the finances? Or what do you think was behind the sort of dragging it out?
It's difficult for me to say. I've thought about this a lot. The mental health issues definitely contributed. She clearly was not in her right mind. I think she would agree that. She was getting some very intensive treatments for depression, ketamine injections, and what she said helped a lot. But I extended myself quite a bit during the divorce, although I had some qualms about it. I extended myself financially in a way that people usually would not, because My credit was better than hers. And I thought, well, she needs credit so she can get her own credit. I'm going to take a chance and, you know, let her keep using my credit cards for a while. That turned out to be a mistake. There were bad things done with the credit cards. And I've never been able to discern what her thinking was. I tried to talk to her about resolving these things and why is this happening. She just went to a very dark place. She went to a very dark place, and there was no way we could talk to each other. She only wished to communicate through our attorneys. So it was a difficult time.
I'm sorry. That sounds awful. And at the same time, you're ready to get on with your life emotionally. But, you know, I'm just thinking, if I'm on a website and I come across you and you look like a very nice man, but then you're like, okay, I'm not actually divorced. And as a matter of fact, you'd be like, whoa, buddy. So, you know, kudos to you for trying, and kudos to the woman. I mean, I totally get it.
I got to a place for the last part of it where when I would get a phone call about something that was going to happen that was upsetting, I would feel a flash of anger, but I could let go of it very fast. So I was not fighting anymore. And at some point, I just decided I didn't care about the money that I was trying to get back. I just didn't want to think about this topic anymore. And I said, just keep it. Let's just sign the papers. And we came to a resolution that way.
Thanks, Chris. And sounds like so much time wasted, right? Though I know from painful experience that when you're in the thick of it like that, it really is difficult to clearly evaluate what to do. Even when, like Chris, you get professional help. Wouldn't it be great if there were a lovingly efficient way to make the stay or go decision? I think there actually may be one out there. It's called discernment counseling. Therapist Linda Hirschman explains it, plus more listeners talk about their stay or go dilemmas. That's all after the break. It's that time of year for gift giving and for goal setting. Know what fits both categories? Learning a new language with Rosetta Stone. It's the trusted language learning program for 30 years, available on desktop or as an app. And it truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. They offer 25 languages with fast acquisition designed for long-term retention. Plus, the built-in True Accent feature gives you feedback on your pronunciation. Rosetta Stone is also convenient. Learn anytime, anywhere, on your own schedule. And here's an amazing value. A lifetime membership offers access to all 25 language courses. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a short time, Dating While Gray listeners can get Rosetta Stone's Lifetime Membership Holiday Special. This offer will not last long. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your holiday offer at rosettastone.com/today today for yourself or as a gift that keeps giving. I love this time of year because whether it's a pullover or a button-up, I love sweaters. Quince is my go-to site. They're known for Mongolian cashmere sweaters priced from $50. In fact, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. That's because they partner directly with top factories. That cuts out the cost of the middleman, allowing the savings to be passed on to customers like you and me. And Quince works only with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing processes. So check out their sweaters. They also have beautiful leather jackets and so much more. Get cozy in Quince's high-quality wardrobe essentials. Go to quince.com/datingwhilegray for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/datingwhilegray to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/datingwhilegray. If you haven't tackled your holiday shopping yet, no worries. Just go to Uncommon Goods. They have unique, hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Some of my favorite things are steel outdoor citronella lanterns that you can personalize, and fishing pole-inspired marshmallow roasters. I'd use them for my wood-burning fireplace. Whatever your choices are, when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. If you'd rather give an experience, you can find those too. They're more than virtual classes. They're unexpected opportunities to have fun and connect in new ways. Tarot card reading, cooking and mixology, gardening, and so much more. Plus, with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. To date, they've donated more than $3 million. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/datingwhilegray. That's uncommongoods.com/datingwhilegray for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. We're back with Dating While Gray, the grown-up's guide to love, sex, and relationships. I'm Laura Stassi. Before the break, you heard Chris describe a kind of torturous cycle of marriage therapy. But there's something relatively new in relationship toolkits. It's called discernment counseling. I asked Linda Hirschman all about it. Linda's a marriage and family therapist and author of Gray Divorce, Everything You Need to Know About Later Life Breakups.
Discernment counseling is a brief protocol, typically 1 to 5 sessions, that is designed specifically for couples when one is leaning out and moving toward divorce and the other wants to preserve the marriage. And discernment counseling is strictly focused on making a decision.
Oh.
There are 3 paths. Path 1 is to stay the course and not make a decision right now. And I will tell you, Laura, everybody who has ever called me for discernment counseling says, oh no, that's what I've been doing. I'm not doing that. We've been doing nothing for a year or 10 years or 20 years. I'm not doing that anymore. And in discernment counseling, staying the course tends to be a more active path, not a passive path. So for example, I have couples who come in for discernment counseling and stay the course might look like until you get individual counseling to deal with your drinking or until I go and work on my depression or until something is resolved, I don't feel prepared to make a decision on what to do about the marriage.
Okay. But do they leave with a sort of a deadline kind of a situation?
Well, sometimes they may leave with a deadline. I have people who will choose to stay the course path and they will say, I'm willing to give this 3 months or 6 months. But oftentimes putting the boundary out there sort of becomes the deadline because the expectation is if, for example, the other person doesn't do their work, then you've already been to discernment counseling. You've said, this is what I need. And so the onus is up to you to then say, we've reached our deadline here.
Yeah. So staying the course, an active staying the course. What's the second path?
The second path is to move towards separation and divorce. And Bill Doherty, who developed the model for discernment counseling, I believe his statistics are that something like 41% of their couples who come in for discernment counseling choose that path. Mine tend to be a little bit lower than that, but not so much lower that we're doing very, very different things. And we, as discernment counselors, when couples choose that path, I personally like to provide resources for the couple to do it in the most collaborative, healthy way for everybody possible. In fact, a lot of my couples who come in for discernment counseling and choose to move forward with divorce were referred to me by family law attorneys and mediators to begin with. Mm-hmm. And the reason a lawyer would want to refer somebody to me is because if the couple comes in and there's some hesitation, if they are a caring, ethical lawyer, they are going to want to have that person explore that before they just rush in and say, great, I can draw up these papers for you.
Yeah.
And then the third path is to commit to intensive marriage counseling to see if the marriage can potentially be saved.
Did you say that there are 3 to 5 sessions before they have to choose one of these three paths? Is that how it typically works?
No. The sessions are done one at a time. And I have a lot of clients who make a decision after one session. I just had a couple earlier today that after one session, both agreed this is the path we want to take. We say 1 to 5 sessions because we don't like to go beyond 5. When you do, you're not discerning anymore. You're just continuing avoiding making a decision. And when we're doing discernment counseling, we want to keep our focus on the decision-making process. And when we stay too long, it risks becoming more about marriage counseling.
Gotcha. Oh, this is so interesting to me. And I really wish this had been a place when I was going through my issues. I mean, we saw a lot of counselors, but it's just your typical, he said, she said, blah, blah, blah. In your experience, the couples who choose the intensive therapy, do you know what the likelihood of having a, you know, happily ever after is for those couples?
I don't know because I don't follow up with them. It's very possible that Bill Doherty and his group in Minnesota, which does all the research, he is probably doing more follow-up. But once I finish discernment counseling, I'm handing them off and
sure,
I'm done, except to offer that if they need to come back for another discernment at some point, the door is open for that.
Have you found that couples actually can come up with the path they want to take, or is that just another point of contention?
Well, again, keep in mind, one person is typically leaning out and the other is typically leaning in, and that can flip-flop during the discernment process too. That's not fixed. But the leaning in partner tends to be more open to the leaning out partner saying, here's my stay the course path and here's what I'd like to see, or let's go to marriage counseling, because the leaning in partner wants to preserve the marriage.
Right.
And they are motivated for change generally.
Are there certain topics? I know every couple is different, but are there certain, I guess, sticking points that you see repeatedly with longtime married couples who come in?
I'm laughing in my head when you ask that question because...
Not out loud.
Every couples counselor will tell you that probably 90% of the people who seek marriage counseling say, we don't communicate, which means nothing to a marriage counselor. And when I have them in the room and they say, our goal is to communicate, or we're here because we don't communicate, what I tell them is, oh, you absolutely communicate. You're never not communicating. It is how and what you're communicating that is creating a problem. So let's drill down on this. And if I wave a magic wand and I sprinkle fairy dust and your communication is what you'd like it to be, or it's better, tell me concretely and specifically what will change about your communication. And that's more often than not the entry into it. And then, of course, you've got infidelity. That's a big one. That's what brings couples in. But again, that's not usually where the focus is once a couple begins the repair process on that. But again, it tends to be different with older couples because oftentimes it's somebody waking up and saying, you know, I just don't want to do this anymore. This is not the life I want to be living.
So is discernment counseling sort of a new, I hate to say buzzword, but is it a new buzzword in counseling?
Well, No, unfortunately, because it's like this fantastic widget that people still don't know has been invented. Discernment counseling was developed, I want to say, about 9 or 10 years ago, and I don't know how long it was in process. But at that point, I had been a marriage counselor for probably 20 years, and I considered myself, based on the feedback and the referrals and everything else, and how many couples successfully terminated treatment, meeting their treatment goals, I considered myself a good marriage counselor. Where I always got stuck, though, was with those couples who came in, and either I knew or I sensed that one person had no motivation, that they were just there to tick off a box or to create a soft landing, or they just didn't even know if they wanted to save the marriage. And those were the couples I really struggled with. And I guess maybe about 10 years ago, I read an article that Bill Dougherty had written about discernment counseling, which he was in process of developing, that was specifically designed for couples who couldn't decide whether to stay or to go. And a light bulb went off, and I thought, this is the missing piece.
Yes.
This is what I need. I need this protocol for these kinds of couples who really are not appropriate for marriage counseling at this point.
I wonder if you can offer some general advice. If someone says they're unhappy, or if someone says, my partner says he's unhappy.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to lean on the men a little bit here, because as my husband says to me, he's always the last one to know. What happens so much of the time is the wife experiences dissatisfaction in the relationship before the husband does. And we try and communicate it. We tell our spouses, I'm not happy here. And too often the response is, well, I'm happy. If you're not happy, go see a therapist. Or I don't understand why you're not happy. Everything's great. And when women are not heard, at a certain point, they will create a crisis, which could be, that's it, I want a divorce. That gets the men's attention. And suddenly they're saying, but wait a minute, I had no idea it got this bad, and let's do something. And so I'm looking at you men. If your wife is saying, I'm not happy with the way the marriage is going, I would like us to work on this together. If you want to be in that marriage, pay attention and do not wait until she creates a crisis.
Okay.
Because once we get to that point, it can be really hard to get us back.
That's Linda Hirschman. By the way, Linda calls out men because, as she says, fun fact, women initiate 66% of all divorces. Not that husbands are happier, but that wives, when they reach a certain level of unhappiness, tend to take the initiative. So wrapping it up, in discernment counseling, Linda works with couples to make a decision to stay the course, move towards separation and divorce, or commit to marriage counseling to see if they can save the union. For couples choosing this third path, Linda usually refers them to a different therapist. Also, Linda recommends counseling for any committed couple who wants to strengthen their ties, whether married or not. Okay, who among us doesn't know at least one couple who tried to save their marriage through counseling and split up anyway? So I'm always gratified to hear the opposite. I got an email from a listener who told me after 27 years together, she and her husband had a crisis that, quote, exploded our otherwise seemingly good marriage. So this listener and her husband went to a type of counseling called PACT, P-A-C-T. It's a lot to get into. We'll have information about it on the bonus content page of the Dating While Gray website. This listener says, quote, it's hard to express how much insight I got, my husband too, from learning about PACT. It was like a veil lifted. The full recovery of trust and shift to a secure relationship took about 2 to 3 years. We're 7 years out now. The PAC system gave us a new way to look at our marriage and new tools. Several friends have told me they can see a difference in how we are together and in particular how he treats me. End quote. Listener, we wish you all the best. And this next voicemail reminds me that sometimes we're able to figure it all out for ourselves.
Hi, Laura. My husband and I have been married for 27 years. We were that couple that everybody thought, oh, they have nothing in common. It's been an interesting 27 years. And we had our ups and downs. The biggest thing about traveling when you're married and you're not traveling together is that it's a big trust issue. You have to trust your partner. And it was kind of tough in the beginning. Not so much the trust, but just, you know, he would go and I would be at home and I would do some work and I'd come back and he'd sort of have this attitude of, well, what have you been doing while I've been gone? And I'd already gone out, worked, came back, positive money, paid the bills. So it was that kind of thing where we had to get used to that and stop rearranging the house every time one of us left. That happened a lot. I think it was probably 14 years ago. Things just weren't clicking. And actually, it felt really dire, you know, one of those crying in the shower saying, I hate you, I hate you. But not really knowing how to do it, I talked to my sister about it. And she just kept saying, you have to tell him, you have to talk to him, you have to do whatever. And I think what eventually led us to our discussion, I always say we, you know, when we brought the D word up, the divorce word, was just that one day we both sort of came to the conclusion that we were no longer married, you know, partners, lovers, whatever. We were roommates. I tried to have a kid and that didn't happen for us. And that was actually another low point in our marriage. But this particular conversation happened one time. We're having our coffee out on our porch in the morning. And I don't know, I can't even now remember who started it. But it basically was, we can't keep doing this. And I think I might have said that, and he immediately agreed and said, yeah, it's like we're not married. So we talked, you know, this is what you do, this is what I do, that sort of thing. It was kind of interesting. I thought it would sort of be very emotional, but it was all very sort of, yeah, I do that. Yeah, you're right. And so I asked, should we get divorced? And it really sort of dropped a bomb into the conversation and everything got really quiet. And of course he said, well, I don't know, do you? But I looked at him and I thought, I don't want to say goodbye to you because I love you. I still love you, but I don't like how we're living. So if we can't change this and be better partners to each other and lovers and husband and wife, then yeah, then we should probably get divorced. So he sort of looked at me with this really intense look and he said, I love you too. And I said, okay, well, can we agree to now talk about the things that are going on that we need to change? And so he did. And that changed everything for us.
Finally, I want to end this episode with a brief return to Chris. There's a surreal plot twist to his story, and it continues to reverberate in his life. But Chris is resilient, and he has some hard-learned advice to share.
Our divorce was finally finalized on March 13th of 2023. The next morning, I got a call from my son, who was with my ex, who said that the ambulance had just taken her away. She was having really serious health problems. She had gained a tremendous amount of weight. She was not taking care of herself at all. She barely could walk. She'd been to the emergency room a couple of times with breathing problems and a blood pressure spike. And I felt like she was self-destructing. And that morning, March 14th, he called. And we followed the ambulance to the hospital, and she was dead from cardiac arrest when we arrived.
Oh, I can't even imagine the emotions, the conflicting emotions that you're feeling.
It's been a lot to deal with. There was still a lot of financial damage being done to me that was going to be continuing into the future, which I was terrified of. And her passing actually caused a bunch of that to stop. So in honesty, there was some relief at being out from under the gun. I stopped being afraid. I'd been so afraid up until that point. And I wasn't afraid anymore, but it's been a kind of an incomprehensible thing to go through. And I can't even understand all of what's happening inside. I'm pretty happy nowadays. I often think that my biggest challenge is to realize how free I am right now. And that's a good thing. But I can tell that there's something sitting inside there that's just taking a really long time to get processed. I mean, there was a conflict between us, and we are not ever going to have a time where we can sit down and come to any agreement or come to any terms about what happened. I mean, it's just stopped there. So yeah. I sort of have to work it out on my own, and it's a challenge, but it's happening over time. When I first got out there in the dating world, I was so vulnerable and so needy and wanting a relationship so bad, and was so hurt when they didn't work out. It's changed a lot since then. I am no longer nearly as eager to get into a long-term relationship as I was. And I don't quite know what to make of that. I think part of it is because I've come to a place where I'm kind of content with my life, and I'm thinking about what do I want to do with myself. I think some of it also is that I probably a little bit afraid of looking back at my 25-year marriage. And what do I know? What I know, what the experience I have is being in a house for 25 years with someone that I don't get along with. And do I know how to do something better than that? Do I know how to be with someone who really wants to be with me and to be a partnership? And in some ways, I don't know that. And I think I can learn that. But I think I feel very frightened of it sometimes, too.
So based on your own experiences, can you offer any words of encouragement, tips, or advice?
The thing that comes to mind is something that I've been working on right now, to not be afraid of saying what it is that I need. And this is manifesting itself, like in my current relationships, I feel afraid to say out loud what I need. And I think to take responsibility for what I need. And during my marriage, I think sometimes I would say, well, I want this, I want it to be more like this. But I didn't take responsibility for saying, well, I need this to be happy. And if I don't have this, then I think maybe we should reconsider whether this is working well. And I think it would have been better for both of us if I'd been able to do that. I have a friend at work who I have lunch with every so often, who's been married for as long as I was married and is very unhappy. His wife and him have not had sex for 12 years or so. And he's wanting and wanting and wanting to get out of it. And I listen to him, and all I can say to other people is what I can say to him, which is I tell him it's better on the other side. If you need to move on, don't be afraid to move on. There is a great life and a lot of wonderful, wonderful people to meet out there.
Dating While Grace audio production and mix is by Steve Lack Audio. Theme music by D. Peterschmidt. Please like and follow Dating While Gray wherever you get podcasts. That way you'll never miss an episode. And if you're so inclined, leave a review letting everyone know what you love about us. For more on the show, check out datingwhilegray.com. That's where you can find bonus content, along with links to send me questions, comments, tips, and true stories through email and voicemail. You know I love hearing from you. You can also sign up for the free Dating While Gray e-newsletter, delivered most Fridays to your inbox. Also at datingwhilegray.com, click on the Sponsors tab to find discount codes from our show sponsors. Please support the companies that support Dating While Gray. To make a more personal gift, click on the Support Us tab. Again, that's all at datingwhilegray.com. I'm Laura Stassi. Thanks so much for listening.